Good evening and welcome back. We'll see if we can finish the second half of Chapter 30, Reality Experienced. This is a pretty deep chapter. This may be the most significant chapter in this entire study series. If you come away from this chapter with a little bit better understanding, you've missed the boat. If you come away from this chapter with nothing more than considering some of these concepts, you've missed a great opportunity, the greatest opportunity of your life. And this is not an exaggeration. In this chapter is the secret to spiritual healing, spiritual living. In this chapter is the pearl of great price. This chapter has the key to the kingdom of heaven as an experience. Reality experienced, the kingdom of heaven experienced. So you might want to stick with this chapter, and even when you finish the study, come back to this chapter. For it has the very secret of God itself. Now, in the last talk, we discussed the cones that are in this chapter, and there's going to be some more. And cones, if you remember, are the Zen Buddhist way of getting you to go beyond the mind. And this entire Kailua study series it came forth from consciousness in order to help all those anywhere who would ever hear it to go from the mind to the spirit, to go from the letter to the spirit, to go from thoughts about truth to truth itself. And if you remember in the book Beyond Words and Thoughts, in the chapter Unveiled or something about the veil. Hang on a minute, I'll look it up. Oh, I remember. Truth Unveiled. In that chapter, he talks about... That's another chapter, by the way. You could study that and this chapter here and come to everything you ever need to know. I'm really serious. I know I've said that in the past, and perhaps it was a bit like crying wolf. But that chapter in Beyond Words and Thoughts, and this chapter in the Kailua Study Series, if taken together and studied, and then lived, practiced until you are living them, at whatever price, whatever cost it costs you for your personal life, no price is too high. If you will take those two and live with them for a year or two and practice them until you're actually living them and they are living you, the principles are, then, as he describes in that chapter in Beyond Words and Thoughts, you will experience an ascension. Right here on earth, in your present body and conditions, you will experience an ascension. I'm beginning to experience it myself, only in little bits, but I'm beginning to experience it. And as he describes in Beyond Words and Thoughts, it's an ascension over the mind. He says in there that he experienced it, the ascension, and the ascension is always the same, coming up over the mind, from knowing the truth to being the truth, from knowing the truth about God to the actual experience that I am the truth. And that's an experience, not a thought or a poetic statement. So that chapter in that book and this chapter in this book, if you will work with them, you will find that you are starting the experience of the ascension. And it may be long and drawn out, but it may be rapid. You will experience an ascension up over the mind. So that's the pearl of great price. There's nothing, no higher gold that you could have. And gold is the wrong word. No higher attainment that you could ever attain. So I consider it very, very, very important. Now let's see. We left off here that the master didn't need to have a few loaves and fishes. He could have started with nothing, because he had the consciousness of omnipresence, and out of the consciousness of omnipresence all things emanated. And I tell you, up until now, in your truth studies, probably, like me, like others, you have only had truth in your mind, which is a concept about truth. Through this study, if you have practiced, if you are practicing those 12 periods a day, or as close to that as you can, if you are beginning to have little inner movements, experiences, then you are beginning to touch that consciousness of omnipresence. And it is out of that consciousness that all things emanate. And so you can see how important this is. Now, he says it wasn't necessary for Christ to have a few loaves and fishes. It wasn't necessary for Elijah to have a few drops of oil. Because all of that, anything, everything ever needed throughout eternity will emanate from that consciousness. But you see, it has to be an experience and not a thought. So he says, consciousness is the power of reality, and that consciousness is right present where you are. But there's no use of wasting time trying to find it. It is where you are because it is your consciousness. You see, what you're going to do is have an experience of your own consciousness. Perhaps we've all looked at that word before. I know I have. Consciousness. What's consciousness? Perhaps you've contemplated it. Well, consciousness is awareness, or consciousness is God, or however you contemplated it. But all of that was purely on the mental level, and you never had an experience of consciousness. And he says at the beginning of this chapter that reality is a synonym for God. And God is a synonym for consciousness. This may be somewhat as a shocker if you ever realize this at depth. I know it was for me. Did you know there's no God up there in the sky? Well, we'll say to ourselves intellectually, of course, God's omnipresent, blah, 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 blah. That's not what I'm getting at. Do you know there's no God? We think of omnipresence and we think of God as stretching way out there to infinity. And sometimes we even feel that God's out there somewhere, in another dimension perhaps. We feel that there's God and there's me, and I'm reaching out to God in my meditation so that I might make contact, right? That's not true. That's a false concept. That's the way we start this journey, but it's not true. There's no God out there. There's no God anywhere. your consciousness is God, and there is no other God beside your consciousness. So you can even say to yourself, my consciousness is God. God is my consciousness. But that doesn't help too much, except it shocks you into realizing, whoa, God already is my consciousness. There is no other God. There's no God somewhere I have to attain or come to or please or beg or placate or tithe to or behave good for or somehow be pure enough for or tie myself in knots. God is my consciousness. The only God there is consciousness. There is no other. However, that won't do us any good as a contemplation, according to this chapter and according to this book, according to this study. That's pretty much useless. It might serve to make us feel a little peaceful for a minute. But until we have the actual experience of consciousness revealing itself, and it is an experience, nothing will change. We could die with those very words on our lips tomorrow, God is my consciousness. And we could die that way. It won't do us any good. But when we have the experience of that consciousness, then the ascension begins. Now, there are some very, very important parts to this chapter, so this one coming up next is one of them. Really need to be looked at deeply, pondered, asked for light on. It says here, that there's something invisible, something behind the senses. Behind it all is the consciousness, and it is called God or reality. And here comes the important part. You can see why when reality appears as form, or God appears as form, or consciousness appears as form, you mustn't call it unreality. It is not unreality. It is form. The way in which you see it may be unreal. The unreality is in your vision of the form, not the form. The form really exists, but the way in which you are seeing them, beholding them, that's the state of unreality, but out there is not a state of unreality. All right, now I've been saying that for a couple of years now. No illusion is ever externalized, and I still get emails asking me or complaining or telling me about this unreal world or this unreal person or this unreal physical problem. People are still not getting that principle, which tells me they haven't taken it deep into their inner being. It's what we must do. It's what we're all about in the infinite way. We must take all of these things deep into our inner being and live with them for days and weeks and sometimes months. This is what I do. This is why I receive impartations from within, not because I read a chapter out of Practicing the Presence and sat it down and had a pleasant contemplation and something popped into my mind. It's not like that at all. It's taking, okay, this entire world I'm looking at is real. Wait a minute, that can't be true. Because that one, that part over there is dying. That part over there is rotting away. There's a law of entropy. Everything's wearing down. My body's wearing down. My wife's body is wearing down. Everybody I know is starting to die. We're at that age where our friends are dying. Don't tell me this world is real. But here it is, from a mystic saying that when reality appears as form, you mustn't call it unreality. It isn't unreality. It's form. Well, now, what can that mean? What can that mean? I have a problem here. It's one of these cones, isn't it? And I'm working with the cone. Form is consciousness formed. It's not unreality. But every form I see is wearing out, breaking down, having discords. Now, these both can't be true. I got to take this within and live with this. And it starts to bother me. It starts to haunt me. I'm sure those Zen students were haunted by the sound of one hand clapping. Another famous cone they had was, does a dog have Buddha nature? Well, if you say, yes, let's put it in our terms, does a dog have the Christ mind? Well, if you say, yes, the dog has the Christ mind, oh, don't be stupid. Look at that dog chewing on its leg. However, in the absolute, only the Christ mind is there. So how do I solve that? Well, that's what I have to do with these truths that Joel drops on us. And so now, right now I have this one. You can see why when reality appears as form, you mustn't call it unreality. It isn't unreality, it's form. The way in which you see it may be unreal, but the form is real. Well, how can that be? Look at this form. Look at it. In this part of the world, we have beautiful trees called hemlock trees. And before that, there was the chestnut trees. And they've got a disease, and they're slowly dying off. You can't tell me that form is not unreality. So he must mean something different. What is it? And it bothers me, and I take it inside, and it haunts me. And the next day I get up for meditation, and there it is, staring at me in my face. And so I take it in again, still no answer. The following day, the following week, it stays with me. One day I go into meditation. Yes, I know. Somehow consciousness is formed, and the illusion is in my seeing. And finally, something's imparted. I reach a place of a blank wall, he calls it. I reach a blank wall. And in that blank wall, as I'm sitting there, something happens. And it is revealed, the answer to the cone. I don't think it up. I don't think it through. Thinking stops. I have no answer. God, have you got one? And yes, something's revealed. It's imparted. It's not a thought. It's a glimpse. It's a glimpse of consciousness formed. And that's as much as I'm going to tell you on that, because I don't want to tip the secret so that you have another intellectual answer. However, the point I'm making is that when that glimpse comes, I suddenly can understand that all of these things I see decaying, he's right. The illusion is not out there. And I also come at the same time to an actual experience, an inner, what shall we call it? Quick flash or an inner transcendental knowing that floods through me of consciousness formed. Now it's a spiritual experience. And it comes. And it comes from taking this cone within and reaching that blank wall. Now, this really happens. I have this happen consistently. All right. So, you can see that this is very, very important that you take these things, like the one we just read. You can see why reality, when it appears as form, you mustn't call it unreality. It isn't unreality. It is form. The way in which you see it may be unreal. Those kind of things you have to take into your closet and wrestle with them until they give you the gift. Each one has a gift. Okay, enough of that. So let's get back to this. This form in front of me, whether it's a pine tree, a rock, is not unreality. It is consciousness appearing as form. The way I'm seeing it is not the way it is actually there. Do you see that? And no, if you haven't wrestled with that, you probably don't. At least you don't feel it. You see, when you're reading this and you have an intellectual understanding, it doesn't go deep enough. It doesn't activate your soul. So next week, when a problem comes, you're like, why do I have this problem? How come this? Well, look what the illusion out here is showing me. You see? You're back into thinking that the illusion's out here without even knowing it. But when you take this into your closet and look at it deeply, get to the end of that cone so that the gift can spring forth, you reach that blank wall, as we talked about, and then out of no thing, something springs forth. Ah, then it's different. Now you've had the inner realization, and you can never again be fooled into thinking the illusion is out there because you've seen spiritual form, and you know spiritual form is there. Okay, I hope that can get you motivated. All right, let's see. So it's the way I behold the form. The form is consciousness appearing as form. Now, how many times has Joel told us over the years? How many books and pamphlets and tapes and talks have we heard him say that no illusion is ever externalized? That God is the substance of all form. And yet we've never taken that into our closet to say, well, what form is he talking about? Now, earlier in this study, he hinted at it very strongly. Chapter 7, I think it was, which was the chapter about this body. What about this body? That's another one you need to study. There's plenty cones in there, and you need to take them into your closet. I think you're beginning to see, I hope you're beginning to see, studying does not mean reading, closing your eyes and thinking about it, does it? No, we need to enter into the chapter and have the cone, the paragraph, the page, enter into us and there dwell with it until the soul has had its say, which comes in the form of a glimpse. So, back to this, where he says, this body is the temple of the living God, but you're not seeing it that way. This is the temple, not made with hands, eternal in the heavens. But your eyes are blurred, and so you see it as so many inches high and so many pounds heavy. It's our mortal, material sense of things which is universal to all of us. That's the glass darkly. But could you rise in consciousness? Well, then you would see face to face. For now we see through a glass darkly, but if we can reach this blank wall and stand stock still, something will happen and we'll see face to face. will have the actual glimpse of the temple not made with hands, which is eternal in the heavens. And I tell you, it's coming to me more and more, some deeper, some just really quick. But it's coming. So could you rise in consciousness, which means ascend up over the mind, to that place of no thing, no thingness, to that place of absolute attunement with the rhythm of the universe, you would then behold this body as it really is. Now that's a promise. That's a promise. Now let's go back again and look at something. The unreality isn't out there. It's in the way I behold the form. The form is consciousness appearing as form. Now, let me read this first. Our work is never changing form. Because why would you change the form if it's the temple not made with hands, eternal, perfect in the heavens? So our work is never changing form, period. Our work is always changing consciousness by making contact or letting God within reveal reality. Now I keep going back again and again and again to my vision that came to me in the middle of a night, disguised as a dream. I'm going to tell it to you yet again. In this vision, I was floating up above the world, up above all trees and buildings and streets and cars and people and all the problems down there. And I was feeling grateful that I had risen that far. And suddenly I started to float back down. Oh no, I thought. And I started flapping my arms, you know, my arms tucked in and flapping my elbows up and down to try to raise back up. Suddenly, out of nothing, came this beautiful feeling of presence of God, and a voice that whispered inside of my being and said, "You don't have to work that hard." Now that, my friends, is the Kai Lewis study series, and I didn't know it, because it was after that dream that this book came into my experience. This book was the outer form of that dream. What that is showing us, and no principle is ever for one person, so it's showing all of us this, is that our work is never changing form. We are never healing something. We are never repairing relationships. Never, never, never. We have no patient. We have no problem that we're working on. Never. That was in the past when we thought we had to apply principles on problems. Now we are learning. All that we need is a change of consciousness. Now we are learning there's no unreality that needs repairing. As he said in this chapter, what would you think of somebody that realized 2 times 2 is not 5 and they continued to work on it? Oh, but you don't understand, I got to fix this thing. No, all they have to know is it's not 5. All we have to know, when any appearance hits us, whether bad or good, when any discordant picture hits us, all we have to know is, no answer to this, and drop it. Now that's the same as, you don't have to work that hard. We're not working on that anymore. It's enough to just dismiss it as appearance, or dismiss it as nothingness, or dismiss it as mental image. You're done. 2 times 2 is not 5. That's not there. Or only God is here. Whether positive or negative, he says. So that's all there is with that. You're done with your treatment. I think he's going to get into that, so perhaps I should... Yeah. Okay, maybe I'm getting ahead of myself. But in the margin here, I wrote, our work is never changing form. Our work is always changing consciousness, or ascending up over the mind. All right. So, once we've dismissed it, what do we do then? Well, he says, what does he say? We say, no answer to that, and we drop it. Your words can be something different. That doesn't matter. The point is that you drop it. Then he says we turn within and we wait. We wait. We just wait for the Spirit of God to be upon us. And if we wait, and as we wait, there's a movement within. Now here, in this chapter, he's given us another way. He's given us these cones to take within, and I use both of them. I use those 12 periods a day. I use the short ones when presented with an appearance, a discordant appearance. But I also use these cones, and I take them in to my temple and contemplate them. Because that also brings you to a place of waiting when you hit up against that blank wall. So he says, if you could rise in consciousness to that place of no thing or nothingness, in other words, ascend up over that mind and rest before the throne, before that blank wall to the infinite invisible, you would then behold the form as it really is. In other words, it would be healed, or the perfect consciousness would reveal its form. We call that a healing. That's why very often it happens when practitioners are in treatment. Sometimes they catch, if they rise high enough, they catch a glimpse of the real body. He's giving you intellectually here something that you need to discover as an experience, but I'll go ahead and read it anyway. But just forget it as soon as I read it, and know that you need the experience. They rise high enough, they catch a glimpse of the real body. It isn't a physical form, or a female form, or a male form, and yet it is form. It is as tangible as that which we see with the eyes, only we are seeing it with the soul, and we are seeing it as it is. We are told that we will then awaken, thou that sleepest. We will then behold him as he is, and we will be satisfied with that likeness. Yes, if we can ever see each other through the soul sense, then we will be well satisfied with each other. And we do see each other through the soul sense whenever a healing takes place. Or if you read that in reverse, whenever a healing takes place, it is because we have seen each other through our soul sense. You see how this is all fitting together like a puzzle coming together? You must come up over the mind. And whether you do it by saying, no answer to this, and standing stock still, no mind involvement or movement at all, and feeling the next thing is spirit revealing itself, or whether you take one of these contemplations, one of these cones into your contemplation, and reach that blank wall and stand stock still, and then catch a glimpse of the real forms of consciousness forming itself. Either way works just fine, and he's going to tell you in this chapter that either way works fine. So that's what takes place in a healing. But see, don't think you understand that because you've just read these two paragraphs. You don't. You don't understand it. You need to forget what he said about it. And you need to go within and say, well, I've got to have this experience. Now, which one appeals to me better? Well, today, I like this, no answer. Father, you speak. But tomorrow I feel a little bit better if I contemplate. How can it be that God is the substance of all form, and yet I see all form deteriorating? What does it mean no illusion is externalized? What is consciousness formed? I don't understand which came first, the chicken or the egg. How could the crops be in the ground before the seeds were planted? What's going on here? What's the truth, Father? You see that? All right. So that's what takes place in healing. That's what causes a healing. When one individual, could be you today or me today, or you tomorrow or me tomorrow, when one individual beholds reality. But you can't behold reality with your eyes. And you will never behold reality with your thought, with your mind. Some other part of you will show you reality as an experience. And you don't know what that's going to be like until you have it. Don't you see that's what that statement means in Revelation? I will give you a stone, and on that stone is written a new name, which no one knows, saving he that receives it. That's exactly what that means. You are being told that in your inner consciousness, you will be given something that's not physical, something that's not mental, something that's a new stone, something called consciousness, which maybe you've never experienced before. But you will come to see that that's what you really are, and all this other stuff out here was simply in your imagination. Not only will you come to know your new name, which you are given by Christ, which is consciousness, you will see that consciousness forms itself. And you will experience that. You will actually experience consciousness forming itself. Then your new life will really begin, won't it? So, that is what constitutes healing. That is what causes a healing. When one individual beholds reality, any form of discord or distress then in range of that consciousness disappears. That is what constitutes a healing. The attainment on the part of one individual of even one single second of reality. Now listen, listen. One individual, you, ascending up over the senses, ascending up over the mind, standing stuck still, you may have one single second of consciousness experienced. And in that single blink of an eye of beholding or witnessing reality, God, or consciousness, the healing takes place. Now, does that sound strangely familiar to you as it does to me? In the twinkling of an eye, we shall all be changed. Now, I didn't realize this scripture in Revelation and this scripture from Paul. Until this very moment, as it was revealed to both of us, to all of us. But that's what that means, and I see it now. All right. At a certain period of development, there is a transition. You pass into it, and everybody who is receptive and responsive does receive some measure of good, of harmony, by contact or association with you. You are not able to hold that intense soul vision for long enough periods, however, and you have to keep going back into it continuously. Now, why? Well, this makes total sense, doesn't it? I mean, in the beginning you have a glimpse, the twinkling of an eye. Then you find, I've got to stay in this more. Why? Because when you go back to your everyday life and you're pulled back into seeing people, places, and things as reality, and conditions and problems, well, the only way to catch that glimpse again is to go within your inner temple, whether through one of the 12 periods a day or whether through contemplation of one of these cones, one of these principles. So you'll find if you're really serious about this, you don't like being pulled back down to a physical being. You don't like being pulled back down into a mental, intellectual thinking, thought process being. You prefer to stay in that secret place of the Most High, ascended up over all that. Even if only for brief periods, you want as many as you can have in the day and night. And so your life begins to change. Your priorities begin to change. You don't have such an ambition for things as you once did. Parties and social gatherings and card games and things drop away because there's no place like home. There's no place like home. There's no place like home. And you like being there. You like spending your time there. So naturally it evolves to the place where you say, you know, 12 times a day, I'm not sure if that's enough. I'd like a little more. But gosh, I don't have any more hours in my day. What do I do? And so if you're like Joel, I can remember where he said he was awakened in the middle of the night and he had a brief meditation and he discovered, wow, it seems to be a lot easier to attain this presence, this glimpse in the middle of the night. So he started setting his alarm. And he got to the place where he was only having 3 hours of sleep, 3 or 4 or 5 hours of sleep each and every night. And yet he found that this contact he was making on a consistent basis, it sustained him. He didn't need that much sleep. That was another world belief. It turned out he could live on consciousness and get all the rest he needed other than just a few hours. So that's how it worked for him. Now, it hasn't worked that way for me. For me, I have, a while back I started the practice that he suggested just before falling asleep, saying, "Speak, Father, thy servant heareth. If you want me to hear something, I am ready and I am willing." And then when I wake up in the middle of the night, then I sit down for meditation. That's the way I've been doing it. But here's what he's going to suggest. He's going to say, those actively engaged in the work, that is the healing work, and if you want to really prove this principle, there's no other way than to become actively engaged. Well, he says they find it necessary to spend 4, 5, or 6 hours during the night in meditation. Now, I don't know how your life is arranged, but if social gatherings and friends and all that is beginning to drop away, It may be for a reason. It may be so that you can spend more time in your inner temple. But if you're really serious about it and you're going to be actively engaged as a practitioner, you're going to have to spend some time in the middle of the night. And here's what he says about it. And just so you're clear on where we're at right now before I read this, you should be having these 12 periods a day. You should have those periods when you are confronted with a discordant picture. You should also have one period a day in which you just release the Christ. You're there only to commune with that reality and no other reason. And now you should add to it periods during the night. In other words, Joel has you meditating almost 24 hours, 7 days a week. He has you and me praying without ceasing. Now, we talked about, and we've mentioned a lot of times, eventually we will be a walking state of receptivity, an open door through which consciousness forms itself, through which the Christ flows at all times. That's the state we're walking towards. Now, I know you didn't think that you would get there just by somebody waving a magic wand. No, those 12 times a day, those times with the discordant pictures, those times when you sit down just for communion, and now in the middle of the night. That's how you get there. This is how we will pass into that place where it begins living us. Well, he's kind of a hard taskmaster, but how bad do we want it? So he says, those actively engaged in the work find it necessary to spend 4, 5, or 6 hours during the night in meditation. During those hours, they attain more frequent periods of spiritual illumination. Now, spiritual illumination means glimpses, the actual experience of consciousness forming itself, the actual experience of reality enfolding you or flowing through you. Or flowing as you. Now, this experience, they only last a second or a minute. A second or a minute. But in that second or a minute, someone who has turned to them for help receives it. And so you see, if you're working as a practitioner, you really had better do this. Don't you think? Because this is how you attain that second's glimpse, or the minute of experience. And in that minute, in that twinkling of an eye, someone reaching out to you will receive their help. So if they can just attain it 3, 5, 8, 10, 12 times during that night period, when everything else is quiet, they're doing good healing work. And then it so lifts them that it carries them through all the rest of the day. Now, we can be assured of two things. If we try this in the middle of the night and we're dragging our body around the next day from exhaustion or after 2 or 3 days, it is not carrying us through the rest of the day. And the reason why it is not carrying us is because we haven't contacted it. We're still in the mental realm, knowing truth in the mind. We haven't yet ascended up over the mind. And if that's the case, we hadn't better be trying to be practitioners. On the other hand, if you really do contact it 5, 8, 10, 12 times a night, if you contact it, it will indeed carry you. So that's how you know if you're contacting it another way. So that everyone gets some benefit of good from that contact. But for the highest spiritual work, there must be frequent return to the center of one's being for the attainment of this reality. It itself must come into activity, and then it wipes out the discordant appearances. Man doesn't do it. We don't do it. You don't do it. You never will do it. But as you attain that moment of soul realization, it, reality, will do it. So, you know, this Kailua study series, this is making us workers, isn't it? The harvest is plentiful, and here we are, the laborers, which are few. Now, whatever discords and inharmonies remain in your experience, or in the experience of those who turn to us, these are due only to our lack of attaining this experience, or that moment of reality. Because reality dispels it. The attainment of the consciousness of reality dispels any form of illusion. So, if you still have problems, we talked about in the last talk being brutally honest. If you still have problems, you have not attained that moment of reality. You haven't gone deep enough. You were only in the mind. You only knew the truth with the mind. All right, I can't make that any plainer. I hope you're honest with it and you don't fool yourself because you sit down and have a little peace of mind that you've attained it. When you attain it and you have a glimpse, there's no doubt whatsoever. And not only that, but the problem is dissolved. The two go together. That's what Christ does. I am ordained to heal the sick, raise the dead, cleanse the lepers. In other words, Christ dispels the form of illusion. So those two go together, and that's how you know. All right. If you can get back there to where there is no thing and no thought, that's it. That's his click, somebody shared with me, and they're right. That is his click, that momentarily glimpse of reality, which sets you free from the thoughts and things of the world. So you've come to a blank wall. You've come to a stop because you can't go any further. You're stumped. Thought can't reason behind which is which. And so thought, reason, comes to a stop, and you're lost. And that's what the cone is designed to do. Bring you to that place where you're stumped. You're lost. And it's in that second, when the realization comes, I can't think this through. There's no reasoning process to reveal the answer to this. There's no way of reason. Now I'm up against a blank wall. And it is that blank wall which constitutes the split second in which the answer comes to you from within. Because there is an answer. And so to all of these cones, there's an answer. It can't come through the mind. If you satisfy yourself with the mind, well, maybe it's because you haven't yet had the experience. But if you don't see the results, which is dispelling of the problem, you can know it's still the mind. No matter how sweetly it sounds, it's still the mind. No matter how peaceful it seems, it's just the mind. You've got to come to this blank wall where you realize at depth, very deepest part of you, I can't go any further. You mind, will you please be still? And then stand stock still. And if you do this, what did we read last week? Even if it takes 2 to 3 years before you have the first experience, it is worth it. Because in that split second, when you come face to face with the fact that there is no answer in your mind, that's when you will have the experience. Now, he has said over and over, the infinite way is not a teaching, it's an experience. So he's leading you to the experience of the infinite way. And the experience of the infinite way, all these many years, was not to have health and prosperity and happiness. The experience of the infinite way was to ascend up over the mind. That is the secret infinite way that most students don't even know. So, if you're in healing work and you're thinking of consumption or cancer or paralysis or headaches or lameness or heredity and blah, 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 and you get to a place in your thought so you can't think it through, there's no way to think a healing into existence. You come face to face with that blank wall. Why, there's no thought I could think that has influence out there, no spiritual thought that I can think. I am absolutely helpless. When you reach that blank wall, then you are still. Personal sense, of course, is still. And we know a lack of personal sense is silence. And in that silence, in that split second, in which the soul function comes through and gives you that feeling of reality, of God on the field, then is when we get the news that the change has come for the better. Now you see, you can't describe to me what a soul function is that comes through and gives you a feeling of reality. If you can, that ain't it. But if you can't describe that, and yet you experience it, you are now a spiritual healer. When you get to that blank wall, when all thought comes to an end, it is in that second of that reality comes to the rescue. We have this invisible reality. We have it when we have left off using physical and mental force, left off with words and thoughts, and let the soul presence into expression. The sword of the Spirit, he says, is an absolute nothing. It is a presence and a power that is only achieved in the absence of thing and thought. It is attained only at that moment of grace, at that moment of nothing and no thought. And in this state, when we require nothing and no thought, it, consciousness, springs into form. Now, I had a little difficulty, I had a little problem with that. I didn't like that. So I took that into meditation as a cone this morning. What do you mean consciousness springs into form? I've read all my life that the kingdom of heaven is a finished kingdom. There can't be anything left unfinished, so how can consciousness spring into form? That's not right. It must mean something else. What does that mean? In that split second, consciousness springs into form. Because here we go again, thinking that now I want consciousness to change this bad form into consciousness form. No, that can't be it. What is it? What is it? So I took it into my closet. I reached that blank wall. Suddenly, for a moment, for a split second, I felt something. And with that experience came the answer. And the answer that I received was this. Consciousness reveals the form that is really there. In that split second, the glass darkly, we peek through it. It's gone. And consciousness reveals the form that is really there. Okay? So that's what came to me. Now, you are virtually expecting to do the same thing in healing work as making a crop grow without seeds. You're going to make harmony appear where there isn't any harmony. You're going to make health appear where there isn't any health. You're going to make abundance appear where there is complete lack. You're going to do it all without physical means or mental means. Yep. That paragraph right there would be very nice to take within you and have it haunt you for a while. And so you come to the place in healing work that we are trying to develop in this Kailua study series to where you realize, well, nothing I can do will do anything. Nothing I can think will do anything. So the best thing for me to do is to be still and let this thing called God, or consciousness or reality, announce itself. Let reality appear. Let harmony appear. Let good appear. You are actually waiting for the spirit itself to bear witness with your spirit. You're actually waiting for the Christ. But even when you experience it, you still won't know or do not know what the Christ is. You will only know the experience. In letting reality voice itself or express itself, by knowing I can of my own self do nothing, I can of my own self know nothing. That's how you have the experience. You've got to reach that blank wall. You've got to. And he's giving you another way to do that. Do you see why your ordinary prayers are unproductive? They're just statements that issue from the mind. That's why sitting down and knowing truth with the mind has not worked. You're not healthy. You're still in lack. You're still having problems in relationships. Your body is still aching and paining. Why? Because you've only had these statements of truth. You haven't experienced truth itself. Truth itself is an experience. Now, how can he write a book about truth? There's never, ever, in the history of mankind, ever been a book written about truth. You know that, don't you? Because truth is an experience. Something that happens in the twinkling of an eye, in that split second, it just springs forth out of nothing. Now, go ahead and describe that experience. You can't, but you can experience it. And it's the experience of that that dispels the darkness. The light shines. That's the experience of the light shining, and it dispels the darkness. Now, I can't tell you what that experience is. You've got to have it. But when you have it, you'll be smiling ear to ear like our little Zen Buddhist boy or girl. Because you will have discovered the sound of one hand clapping. Now, when we go into meditation or prayer for the realization or establishment of harmony in human affairs, it can be made productive only if you can get so far deep down within yourself as to feel that emanation of God. Now, do you realize what this is saying? Listen to this. He just does this all the time. He drops these bombshells. It's like, my God, this paragraph here is only 2 lines, and it's going to haunt me for the next 5 years. He does. He does to me, anyway. Listen to what he's saying. Let's put it in perspective. Before this, we would sit down and we would think a few statements of thought and take a deep breath and sit there for a moment or two and get up and go about our business and feel that we had prayed aright. Oh, no. No, now he's saying all that you need to do is go into your meditation way down deep within yourself, or come up over any physical sensation and any thought. And in the stillness, stand so still that you feel infinite consciousness emanating itself. My God, that is an experience. So you get so far within yourself as to feel that emanation of God, that unfoldment of reality from within yourself, so that you actually can say to yourself, oh, it happened. I felt it. Even as I just felt it. Even as you will too. So the prayers that come out of your mind or off of your lips won't work because there's no power, there's no consciousness behind them. They're not an experience at all. So you can see prayer and meditation have to do with this spiritual realm, spiritual harmony. In your human experience, spiritual harmony must come forth from the kingdom of God within you, or from consciousness emanating. So this you must remember. It is an actual experience that must take place deep down within yourself, that area of your being which is consciousness, or reality, or God, because your being is God if you get down there deep enough. And when you have that deep inner experience, you have touched God, or you have been touched by God, and then it is that the Son of God takes command of your life and brings forth harmony, wholeness, completeness, and perfection. Please, please, he says, do not be satisfied while your prayers or meditations are on the mental level, which means you're having thoughts about truth. And I wrote here, and you know you are still on the mental level by the results, by the fruits. If there's no harmony and problems continue, oh, you have not gone past the mental level. Please be honest now. Do not be satisfied with that. Until you actually reach it, you have not brought forth the presence and power of the Father within to do these mighty works on earth. So don't rest satisfied unless you have actually felt that you have the Lord God Almighty, and that has come to you with feeling. That has to come to you as an actual sense, glimpse of reality. You must have it as clearly expressed within you as you have your home address. It must be an actual experience. Well, I will share with you now my favorite koan in this whole chapter. I just love this. All that you are right now, and all that you demonstrate, is an emanation of the nothingness that you receive at the center of your own being. That just moves through me. Oh, I can't tell you. It just throws me right into that deep area. There's no answer to that. There's no understanding that. There's nothing I can do with that but rest. I have to rest so still that I actually feel that consciousness emanating itself. Or so still that I actually witness consciousness formed. So still that I actually feel the stone cut out of the mountain without any hands, without any thought, with nothing. This gold is worth mining however many years it takes until you strike it rich and make that contact. This chapter is worth going back to again and again. After we've finished this book and done these other 9 chapters, there may be some more like this, but none are going to be more important than this. This is one of the, if not the, most important chapters in this entire study. I hope you see now is going to require rigorous self-honesty. Am I making this contact? What are the results? If I'm not making this contact, I need to find out how to go deeper. Practicing this 12 times a day will definitely help. Practicing these principles when I'm confronted with a discordant picture, that will help. Sitting before the temple, just in the inner temple, before the throne of consciousness, before the door of infinite nothing, once a day, just to allow it passage through and out into expression, that will help. Getting up in the middle of the night, or as I wake up in the middle of the night, having periods of meditation, that will help. Taking this chapter and pulling the paragraph out that is a cone, taking that into my contemplation until I reach the place of no thought, standing before the door to invisible infinity, that will help. All of these ways are the ways in which you will experience reality. Hence the name of this chapter. And so the infinite way is not a teaching. It's an experience of reality. When you experience this reality and come back again and again, as Joel says, you reach a place where you pass into a new being, a new creature, where it begins living you. And then you are taught by Christ, by the Comforter, by the Father, by the Spirit of Truth, which you have contacted within you. And it will take you the rest of the journey, all the way to your infinite, eternal, immortal oneness in and through the Father, and the Father in and through you. It will take you the rest of the way. Now, no matter how many times no matter how long it takes, if you return here again to Earth, you will start right where you are. You will have that contact already when you get here. If you return again, you will have that contact. You will never lose it until it so lives you that you will be the walking Christ. If this is what you want, then join me, for I am trudging along this path, taking these steps, working diligently. And I am having these glimpses, although, like he says, for the most part, they are a few seconds or a minute or two. Well, I love this chapter because I love reality, God, my very own consciousness. And I love that which consciousness appears as, because I love all of you. Good night.